This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen here with you. Bladder cancer. It's the sixth most common cancer in the United States. And this year alone, it's estimated that more than 74,000 Americans will be diagnosed with bladder cancer, and more than 15,000 will die of the disease. And it's on the rise. We'll hear with more on this and how to prevent this deadly disease is Dr. Srinivas Vorganti. He's the assistant professor of urology at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Vorganti. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
So help us understand first, what exactly is bladder cancer?
So I'm going to start by just explaining what the bladder is. It sounds like there is a organ in your body that you depend on every day that you don't really think about, and that's a good thing. You make urine constantly. Every heartbeat, the kidneys, which filter the blood, make small amounts of urine consistently. But it's not in our benefit to produce urine or leak out this urine all the time. So what the bladder's job is to store this urine to a point that is convenient to us, and several times a day, different frequency and different timing based on how much urine you make, it switches from that storage function to an emptying function. And so the bladder sits in the pelvis in between our hips, essentially, and stores this urine for several hours at a time. Now, what cancers can form because as toxins in our body are filtered out, some of the toxins come out in the urine. And the bladder is exposed to these toxins at a relatively higher rate than other elements of the body.
Is that also because it's a repository? The way you've described it, it's kind of a holding tank.
Absolutely.
For these toxins. If the kidneys, you know, kind of filters them out of our body and it ends up in the urine then goes to the bladder. It may sit there for hours even at a time because we don't void most of us don't void every hour kind of thing. So that means the bladder then is more exposed in a concentrated way to some of these toxins.
And that's the very reason why you might not think of it, but why the bladder is especially susceptible to injury from toxins. And so where the most common bladder cancers start, at least in the United States, are from the lining of the bladder, which you can think of as similar to the lining of your cheek. It's a very smooth, it's a mucosal layer. And on occasion, there can be growths, which are cancerous, that happen from this, from genetic injury to this lining.
So let's back up. So when you say genetic injury, are you suggesting that people are born with a predisposition or a family likelihood to develop a bladder cancer, or is it mostly in response to an external exposure, such as a toxin?
Absolutely. So there are combinations of this. So there are certainly, as the march of science goes on, there are definitely underlying genetic injuries that lead to cancer. That doesn't necessarily mean that the genetics or your hereditary is driving it. The biggest and strongest factor in bladder cancer is actually environmental exposure. And by that, I mean the elephant in the room is smoking. Mm. And then secondarily are toxins that we're exposed to over life. Different individuals have different ability to repair or sustain these injuries. However,
so not everyone is as susceptible. Given two people, one might be somewhat more, by their genetics, be more susceptible to that toxin.
Absolutely.
And someone else might be more resilient to that toxin. But the fact is, the toxin is really what is promoting the development of the cancer.
Absolutely.
So this is a shocking statement to me, because as a novice, a non-medical person, to hear that smoking can be associated with something like bladder cancer. I mean, I would think that people in the field know that, but I'd say the common everyday person really doesn't associate smoking with bladder cancer. More it's smoking with lung cancer or cancers of the mouth, the oral cavity, what have you.
This is almost a universal sentiment I get from my patients, is an underappreciation of the fact that something so common, it's not rare by any means. The economic impact is the most of any cancer.
Why is that?
Well, the reason is that when you are diagnosed with bladder cancer, its treatment, which we will be talking about soon, it has a tendency to come back. And the way we have to watch for it, and the surveillance, and its tendency to recur, like the analogy I give to people, it's like weeds. You pick the weeds or you remove the weeds, but it can grow back. And there is an intense surveillance that has to happen to prevent its progressing.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with urologist Dr. Srinivas Varganti, and we're talking about bladder cancer. Now, why, first of all, do you think it's on the rise? Or is it in fact on the rise? Or is it just that we're better at finding it?
I do believe it's on the rise. It's hard to know exactly why the absolute numbers of things go up. In general, bladder cancer is a cancer as of age. And so there we have talked about who is at risk. Certainly people who are smokers the other thing is it's associated with gender. So males are 2 to 3 times more likely to get it in their lifetime.
And we don't necessarily know why that is either.
Yeah, there are many ideas about that. And the role of female hormones in studying the biology of the disease.
They may be more protective.
There is potentially a more protective element. However, when I say that, it's important to me to also mention that women who get the disease, much like with heart disease, there's an underappreciation, especially because the number one symptom of having bladder cancer, blood in the urine, can often be mistaken for benign
right.
gynecologic
exactly.
symptoms. And when women
thereby be overlooked.
Absolutely. And as smoking is on the rise in women, which is felt to be a huge public health issue, women are understood to also be sort of the unsung or underappreciated sufferers of bladder cancer. So it's important as we go through, just because it's more common in men, that we can't forget that women are also important sufferers of this disease.
So when you say sufferers, let's talk about this idea of symptoms. You mentioned this, what they call hematuria,
yeah,
which
absolutely.
Is a little bit of blood in
yes,
the urine.
Yes, and I apologize for using the medical term.
No, I said it.
Blood in the urine is essentially the number one cause. And if you see blood in the urine, it's never normal. It's often painless, and sometimes it is something that comes and goes. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have cancer, because there are other reasons you can have blood in the urine.
Like a urinary tract infection.
A stone. There are very, very common other reasons, but it is a reason, especially if you can see it, to go see a urologist so this can all be sorted out.
So let's get to that. How is it sorted out? I mean, obviously blood in the urine, and then sometimes pain along with it, can be very concerning, and some people have frequent urinary tract infections with hematuria, with blood in the urine. So what do you recommend? You say go to a urologist. Obviously, you want to start with your primary care physician.
Absolutely.
But what are the steps to diagnosis of the cancer?
So much like most cancers, the most important thing to decide is, when you have blood in the urine, is what is the source? And this is sorted out with a number of tests. So like most cancers, there's a combination of x-rays, urine and blood tests, and a camera that's inserted into the bladder. It sounds very dramatic, but it's actually done, it's very painless. It's uncomfortable, but it's done with numbing medicine. It's done awake, and it's done routinely in a urologist's office.
And that's called a cystoscopy.
And
they go in basically with a little camera to see what inside the bladder, to see what the lining looks like?
Absolutely. And the reason for this is that a direct inspection, much like colonoscopy, a direct inspection of the mucosal lining of the bladder, which is irregular and is a balloon, it's difficult to inspect just with x-rays.
So that's really kind of the gold standard.
Absolutely.
And then is there always a biopsy taken? I know in colonoscopy, often they do take any suspicious tissue.
If something is identified as being abnormal, it is removed. Most of the time, especially if it does look like a cancer, this would require you to come back on another day, undergo an anesthesia for comfort, and this area is removed. And the most important question is, what is it? There are many different types of bladder cancer. There are many different aggressiveness of bladder cancer, range of aggressiveness.
So the cell type is important.
And the depth of invasion. So I mentioned that it starts in the lining of the bladder, and probably about half of cancers as they're identified are just in that lining. But they can also, as they progress, invade into the deeper layers, into the muscle of the bladder, in the area around the bladder. And on occasion, more rarely, thankfully, they can be identified as having spread beyond the bladder.
So they could metastasize, so to speak, exactly. And then they become rampant throughout the body.
Exactly. And each level of depth of invasion is associated with worse outcomes. So this is something for those half of people that are identified of having the cancer in only the lining, often a scraping and other medicines that are given in the bladder can be used to save the bladder with close observation.
So that's the point that you made. The importance of surveillance will continue because I guess there's a tendency for recurrence.
Absolutely.
Once you've been diagnosed with it. So what are the treatments? Just very briefly, I don't want to run out of time. Basically, there's obviously some surgical.
Yeah.
And then how about things like chemotherapy and immunotherapy, I heard was being done.
Absolutely. So the mainstay of treatment is tailored and individualized to each patient. So when you become a bladder cancer survivor and you're fighting bladder cancer, you can be overwhelmed by the amount of different options. If it's more extensive, then a surgical removal of the bladder is often recommended because this is associated with a great survival outcome. Some people are not candidates for this, and there are other bladder-sparing therapies which can be given with a combination of systemic chemotherapy and radiation to the bladder that can also be used. Choosing between these choices, between saving the bladder with scraping it out and medicines in the bladder, and surgery over radiation is a very challenging decision and needs to be done with discussion with your doctor.
Yeah. So let's talk about prevention. We have only a little bit of time left. What are the key points to remember?
The number one thing I have to explain to patients is they really need to stop smoking. Smoking cessation is a big movement in the bladder cancer advocacy community, and we cannot forget about it. Luckily, we are growing off of other lung cancer and oropharyngeal cancers. People know that it causes cancer, so we can grow off of that.
And also avoid exposure to some industrial chemicals.
Absolutely.
If you can, yeah. Obviously. And with OSHA rules, more and more, the workplace is becoming safer.
And then the other thing, it's important to get close medical care, partner with your primary care provider. If this is something, if you're susceptible to cancers, something to just keep in your mind and just be educated about it.
So, and a very healthy lifestyle, obviously. Drink plenty of fluids, water, and eat healthy fruits and vegetables. But that's true for everything.
That's absolutely true for everything.
I want to thank you for coming in. This is very enlightening and important information. My guest has been Dr. Srinivas Vorganti. He's assistant professor of urology at Upstate Medical University. Once again, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.